Welcome to The Deep Dive. We're the show that's really engineered to, well, cut through all that noise, all the information overload out there. Our goal is to deliver the most important nuggets of knowledge, the real insights, directly to you. Because let's face it, in today's world, trying to optimize your health, your performance, it can feel less like a clear path and more like, you know, hacking through a jungle of articles, studies, expert opinions. Do you ever just feel overwhelmed? Like, where do I even start? How do I get genuinely well-informed without just drowning? I know I certainly have. So our mission here is simple. We want to be your shortcut. We distill the crucial details, dig up those surprising facts, maybe add just enough humor to keep things interesting. And today we are plunging headfirst into this fascinating and rapidly expanding world that many are calling Medicine 3.0. Our focus is going to be on the absolute cutting edge, the science, the practical applications of peptides, and a whole bunch of these ancillary compounds that are really shifting how we think about health and human potential. So get ready.
What we're about to unpack is pretty groundbreaking stuff. And just before we dive in, we want to let you know that this deep dive is brought to you by InfinityPeptide.com. Okay, let's pull back the curtain. We're stepping into this area where, you know, the old lines between traditional medicine and this innovative self-optimization, they're not just blurring, they're actively merging. It's pretty exciting.
It really is.
And our sources are highlighting that this whole world of peptides, which, let's be honest, used to be pretty niche.
Oh, yeah, very much so.
It's now surging into the mainstream, like really fast.
Yeah.
There are apparently active efforts, even some political movements, trying to normalize their use, make the information more accessible.
That's right. Trying to get the terminology understood more widely.
But okay, before we dive into what these things are, there's a really critical question, I think. Have you ever noticed how something works perfectly in a lab, right? Super controlled environment.
Mm-hmm.
But then you try it in real life and it seems different, maybe not quite the same.
Absolutely. That gap is crucial.
It seems subtle, but maybe profoundly important, especially here. And that brings us to this idea of the art of application, right?
Exactly. You've hit the nail on the head. That distinction you just made, the gap between the pristine lab conditions and what actually happens when you apply these compounds practically, you know, in a living, breathing human, that's key. Our main source for this bit, an expert who's actually been advising political groups on Medicine 3.0 and peptide terminology.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, they really emphasize this point. Just knowing the science, the mechanism of action, it isn't enough. There's this inherent art to how you actually use these compounds effectively, how you integrate them.
Right. It's not just data.
No, it's about nuanced implementation for the individual. And this leads us right into, well, foundational concepts in this art of medicine. We're talking about pharmacokinetics and pharmacodynamics.
Yeah, let's break those down.
Think of them as like two sides of a conversation between the compound and your body. Pharmacokinetics. That's basically what the body does to the drug.
How it handles it.
Precisely. Absorption, distribution, metabolism, how it gets rid of it. Pharmacodynamics, on the other hand, is what the drug does to the body.
The effect.
Yeah, the specific effects, the actions at the cellular level, the systemic level. But here's the thing. Unlike a really straightforward, almost plug-and-play approach you see in some traditional dosing, like a set milligrams per kilogram of body weight.
Right, one size fits all.
Kind of.
Yeah.
The real-world application, especially with peptides, requires you to sift through a lot of individual noise.
Noise? What do you mean by noise?
Well, it could be anything, really. Your unique genetics, your gut microbiome, current stress levels, what you ate for lunch.
Okay, so lots of variables.
Tons. It's way more than a simple calculation. You know, think about that gut feeling a really experienced, intuitive doctor might get sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
That feeling that goes beyond just the strict equations. That intuitive sense, that understanding of individual variability, it's absolutely crucial here. It allows for adapting, personalizing, getting the best outcome.
So it's understanding not just the compound, but how it interacts with me specifically.
Exactly. Your unique, dynamic, complex system.
That makes total sense. It's not a rigid formula, more like tuning an instrument. So building on that dosage, individual response, I bet a key question for listeners is, how do these different compounds behave when you change the dose? Is it always more is better, or?
That's fundamental. Yeah, a really important question. And it applies to, well, everything. All of medicine, all pharmacology, all supplementation, as our source puts it. It's a core principle of chemical signaling. We can generally break responses down into two main ideas, linear and threshold.
Okay, linear and threshold.
So first, the linear concept.
Yeah.
Imagine you're adding sweetener to your coffee. A little bit makes it slightly sweet. Add more, it gets sweeter.
Proportional.
Exactly. In a linear response, as you gradually increase a dose, say 1 milligram, then 2, then 3, the chemical signal and the beneficial effects, they generally improve. They get stronger in a pretty direct way.
Well, more gives you more.
Generally, yes. Yeah. Now, there's always a tipping point, right? Or like a bell curve response, where eventually the effects plateau or maybe even diminish if the dose gets way too high.
Okay, diminishing returns.
Right. But up to that point, 1 milligram works, 2 milligrams works better, 3 milligrams maybe even better. And crucially, even if you took just a tiny bit, like 500 micrograms, in a linear model, you'd still see some action, just less pronounced.
So even a little does something.
Correct. It's about a continuous escalating benefit. Now, contrast that with the threshold concept. Think of this like a dimmer switch versus an on-off switch. Linear is the dimmer, threshold is the on-off.
Ah, okay. All or nothing.
Pretty much. With a threshold response, you need a minimum amount of the compound to get any chemical signal to see any difference at all.
So below that level, nothing.
Zilch. It's as if you haven't taken anything.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike the linear concept where that tiny 500 micrograms might do something subtle, here, if the threshold is, say, 1 milligram.
Then 999 micrograms does nothing.
Exactly. But hit that 1 milligram and boom, the response activates. Maybe quite powerfully. Understanding this basic difference is huge for you, the listener.
What's that?
Because it explains why maybe some over-the-counter supplements or even peptides get dismissed sometimes as not working when maybe they just weren't used correctly.
Ah, they didn't hit the threshold.
Or maybe they were linear and the dose was too small to notice. It's about knowing, do I need to hit a specific minimum or will a smaller increasing dose gradually build the effect? It's your first step to using these things intelligently.
That's a massive clarification.
Yeah.
Huge. So it's not just about how much. But how does it start working?
Mm.
Okay, beyond dosage, what about timing? How fast do they work? How long do the effects last?
Yeah.
Immediate versus long-term changes.
Yeah, another critical distinction. This gets into non-genomic versus genomic action, super important concepts because they dictate whether you're looking for, you know, an immediate fix for something happening right now or if you're aiming for a deeper long-term systemic change.
Okay, non-genomic first.
Non-genomic effect. This is immediate. Acute action. We're talking effect within seconds, minutes. Basically, the moment the substance enters your system from outside exogenously.
The quick hit.
Very quick. It's not about changing your DNA programming. It's direct, rapid signal transduction, like pushing a button, getting an instant response. It's interacting with receptors on the cell surface, maybe in the cytoplasm,
mm-hmm.
leading to fast cellular responses.
So that's why some supplements give you that quick feeling.
Often, yes. They're hitting these immediate non-genomic pathways. It's an in-the-moment kind of change. Now, genomic effect. This is the long game. It describes a longer-term chronic action. Here, the compound actually gets into the cell nucleus.
Okay, deep dive.
Literally. It influences your overall epigenetics, drives actual genetic changes over much longer periods, days, weeks, months, years, potentially.
Wow. So this is changing the blueprint almost.
In a way, yes. Changing the expression of the blueprint. This is where the last day systemic changes happen. The deep foundational shifts that lead to more permanent improvements in health or function. Think long-term immune modulation or building muscle mass over time. So tying it all together for you, the listener, these four concepts.
Right.
Pharmacokinetics, pharmacodynamics, linear versus threshold signaling, and non-genomic versus genomic action. They are the absolute bedrock.
The foundation.
The foundation for applying these compounds intelligently. They dictate frequency, dosage, duration for any application.
Yeah.
Understanding them lets you figure out how a peptide should be used for your specific goal.
Do I need the quick fix or am I playing the long game?
Precisely. Need that immediate effect for an acute issue or aiming for those profound long-term changes. Knowing the difference is absolutely key to using these things effectively.
Okay, foundation laid. We've got the art, linear versus threshold, non-genomic versus genomic. Now we can really appreciate the specific compounds. Let's dive into some of the heavy hitters, starting with peptides focused on healing and regeneration.
Yeah.
Our sources have basically given us a cheat sheet here.
Yeah, it's a great starting point. And if we connect this back, the reason peptides are, frankly, so cool and central to this medicine 3.0 idea is their versatility.
Right, not just one target.
Exactly. They can drive like 100 plus actions working on multiple systems all at once, which is amazing, but also challenging.
How so?
Well, you read the research and one peptide seems to do everything. So the art comes back in identifying the primary reason you want to use it for your goal. cutting through the noise of all the potential benefits. So let's start with a popular one, BPC-157, Body Protection Compound 157.
Okay, BPC-157, what's its main thing?
Primary action, blanket statement, tissue-based healing, that's its core strength, broad potential for recovery muscles, tendons, gut lining, skin, you name it.
Pretty comprehensive.
Very. But it's more nuanced. It has cool downstream interactions, like with the AMPK cascade.
AMPK, that's the energy sensor, right?
Yeah.
Metabolic master switch.
You got it. So BPC influencing that means it can nudge your body towards better energy use, better cellular repair, how cells handle stress, even how they regulate their own life cycle. This can lead to some interesting cool changes to cancer cell apoptosis, basically helping program unhealthy cells to self-destruct. Still early research, but promising.
Wow.
And more specifically, it benefits soft articular cartilage, crucial for joint health. That's why you hear about it a lot for injuries. But here's a surprising twist, a sort of quaternary action.
Okay.
BPC-157 can potentiate, stimulate, and cause overexpression of growth hormone-related receptors.
Meaning?
It makes your body more sensitive to growth hormone. So if you're taking GH exogenously or just trying to boost your natural response, BPC can potentially make those growth signals work better.
Interesting synergy.
However, and this is a big however, it raises an important question about personalized use. While it's great for healing, BPC-157 has this potential to negatively impact dopamine receptor neurotransmission.
Okay, dopamine. Yeah. That's motivation, reward.
Movement, yeah. It can skew how dopamine binds to its receptors. So for people with existing neurological issues, maybe post-finasteride syndrome, high anxiety, depression, basically any dopaminergic problem, BPC might not be the best choice.
Because it could mess with that system even more.
Potentially, yeah. In those cases, you might favor other peptides for healing, just to be safe. It's a crucial consideration.
That dopamine link is definitely something most people wouldn't think about. Okay, so BPC is the tissue healer, but with that dopamine caveat, what's another healing peptide maybe working on a different level without those concerns?
Perfect transition. That leads us to TB500, or thymosin beta-4. Its primary action is really unique, maybe even one of a kind. It's believed to be the only peptide that turns on neonatal gene expression.
Neonatal.
Yeah,
newborn genes.
Exactly. Imagine your body sort of reverting back to how we should be. If you'd never accumulated any damage, oxidation, inflammation, injuries, like being a fresh baby 31 years later, as the source puts it.
Wow, that's a powerful concept. A reset button?
Kind of, yeah. Activating genes that were super active when you were in your most pristine, rapidly developing state. And here's where its non-genomic acute action really shines. TB500 does a tremendous job at immediately reversing neurological damage from things like strokes or other catastrophic neurological events if applied acutely.
Immediately, like an emergency rescue.
Pretty much, yeah. An acute neurological rescue agent. Our source shares this really powerful story about a guy named Carl Lenore.
Okay.
He had a stroke, and while waiting for the ambulance, used TB500, the outcome. When he left the hospital, there was apparently no sign of strokes.
That's incredible.
It really highlights that rapid non-genomic potential in a crisis. Now, that's the acute side, the activation of those neonatal genes. That's the longer-term genomic effect, promoting deep foundational healing in organs and tissues. So it's dual action. And because of these complementary roles, BPC for broad tissue healing, TB500 for activating those deep regenerative genes and organ healing.
They work well together.
Exactly. The combination of BPC-157 and TB500 is highly favored for any insult injury, torn muscle, blown knee, whatever. The recommendation is to use them as soon as humanly possible after the trauma to hit both immediate repair and long-term regeneration.
That's a potent combo for recovery. But what about speeding things up from an even more fundamental level, like mobilizing the body's own repair crews, stem cells?
Excellent question. That brings us right to GHKQ, glycyl-histidyl-L-lysine-copper.
GHKQ, I think I've seen that in skincare.
You probably have. Its secondary actions are quite famous, improving beautiful-looking hair and beautiful-looking skin. It drives positive protein translation for hair, skin, nail growth, and repair. High-end cosmetics love it.
Right, but that's secondary. What's primary?
Its primary role, and this is where it gets really interesting for healing, is driving stem cell migration. And our sources say it does this one pretty much the best among all peptides.
Mobilizing stem cells, that sounds huge.
It is, because stem cells are the body's master repair units. So GHKQ's ability makes it fantastic to use strategically, say, before stem cell therapy or around exosome therapy.
To make those treatments work better.
Exactly. It primes the area, draws your own stem cells there, makes the environment more receptive. It also complements TB500 and BPC157 beautifully because stem cells are at the baseline of everything for healing.
Like prepping the construction site before the builders arrive.
Perfect analogy. And beyond that primary role, it also has other uses, like helping to reduce fibrosis in erectile tissue. So quite versatile.
Okay, GHK2 for beauty and foundational repair via stem cells. Very cool. But sometimes, the biggest roadblock to healing isn't just damaged tissue, it's massive inflammation.
Absolutely. Inflammation can just shut down the healing process.
So what's a good tool for that, especially if someone has those dopamine sensitivities we talked about with BPC?
Right. Good point. For tackling inflammation directly, especially with those sensitivities in mind, we look at KPV. Lysine prolanvaline.
KPV, what's its superpower?
Its coolest role, its primary action, is to drastically downregulate inflammation. It's really effective at tanking, significantly reducing high levels of systemic inflammation, the kind you'd see reflected in markers like high hsCRP or IL-6.
The key benefit here is?
It has limited interactions with dopamine receptors.
So if BPC-157 is problematic because of potential dopamine disruption,
then KPV is a really good option. Now, it doesn't offer that direct tissue healing quite like BPC does, but by pulling down that excessive inflammation in an injured area,
it helps indirectly.
Massively. It aids oxygenation, hydration, overall recovery. It creates a much better environment for healing to happen. So it's a strategic alternative when you need powerful anti-inflammatory action without the potential dopamine side effects. It lays the groundwork.
Okay, that's a solid toolkit for healing and regeneration. We've covered tissue repair, activating deep healing genes, mobilizing stem cells, even managing inflammation. But we can go deeper, right? To the cellular level, specifically our energy factories, the mitochondria.
Exactly. That's where so many profound systemic changes really start. At the mitochondrial level.
And our sources say something fascinating about mitochondrial DNA.
Yeah, this is really cutting-edge stuff. Apparently, mitochondrial DNA inside those little powerhouses releases these things called short open reading frames. And these frames, in turn, release a whole variety of peptides.
Peptides made by our mitochondria.
Essentially, yes. And they have incredibly far-reaching effects, cardiac health, how we use nutrients, even longevity. It's a whole new class of signaling molecules originating from within our cells' engines.
This brings us to the mitochondrial peptide family, a really exciting group. First up, MOY. That stands for mitochondrial open reading frame of the 12S RNA.
MOY, what's its role? Our source calls it the in-between player or the little bit of everything player. It's super versatile because it modulates key pathways like AMPK.
The energy sensor again?
Right. And MTOR, which is central for cell growth, muscle building, repair. By tweaking both, MOY has a big impact on how we use nutrient partitioning.
Okay, so metabolism tuning. Any other big benefits?
Yes, a key one.
Yeah.
It's a very big cardiac player. It's been studied and used to help reverse and fix a lot of different cardiomyopathies, hypertrophies, fibrosis, basically various heart problems, helping remodel and restore heart function.
Wow, heart health too.
Definitely. So MOY is really positioned as our overall health and body composition and performance player. Pretty comprehensive. Then we have CB4211. This one's an analog of MOY. Similar structure, related pathways.
So similar effects.
It definitely has health benefits, but its primary action is seen as being the biggest nutrient partitioner out there.
Nutrient partitioner.
Yeah.
Directing calories effectively.
Exactly. It drives up insulin receptor activation, making cells more sensitive to insulin. This really improves how your body handles nutrients, directing them towards energy and muscle, not fat storage.
So potentially good for insulin resistance or diabetes.
Potentially very useful, yes. Directly impacts glucose handling. Next in the family, SS31. This one's touted as the biggest health player among the mitochondrial peptides. It's particularly indicated for really severe conditions.
Like what?
Things like chronic kidney disease, CKD, kidney failure, and heart failure. It seems to have profound effects there, targeting the mitochondrial dysfunction that's common in those diseases.
Sounds powerful. Is there a catch?
Well, this raises an important practical point. Its price tag is higher compared to others.
Cost.
Yeah, and it often needs pretty high dosages to work well, which can also be an off-putting reason for some. It does have some spillover benefits for nutrient partitioning, fat burning. But if those are your main goals, other peptides might be more cost-effective. SS31 is really for those critical health situations where its deep mitochondrial repair is most needed. And finally, rounding out this mitochondrial family, we have SOU SLU-PP32.
SLU-PP32.
Catchy name. Ah, yeah. This one's described as the overall best mitochondrial player if you're trying to get a little bit of everything or if you're trying to have your cake and eat it too.
The all-rounder.
Pretty much. Broad benefits, significant spillover into performance, body composition, general health. Our source mentions it being used to reverse renohepatic problems, kidney and liver issues, and even ocular problems, eye conditions.
Wow. Really wide-ranging.
Yeah, it affects fat burning, beta oxidation, muscle building, anabolism, those AMPK cascades, even longevity pathways. It optimizes cellular energy, reduces oxidative stress. It's positioned as that comprehensive mitochondrial optimizer, a real Swiss Army knife for cell health.
That's an incredible look inside our cells' engines. Amazing how deep we can influence things. Okay, shifting slightly, but still thinking about body composition. What if we could influence, like, the blueprint itself? Where energy goes, how it's used, beyond just standard metabolism.
That's a perfect segue. Moving just beyond those strictly mitochondrial peptides, but staying with compounds that profoundly reshape body composition and core systems. Let's talk about oxytocin.
Oxytocin, the love hormone, social bonding.
That's what it's famous for, absolutely. Social bonding, trust, effects on sexual performance, enhancing orgasm frequency strength, impacting erectile tissue in both males and females. All true.
But it does more in this context.
Oh, yeah. Its primary role here is actually pretty surprising. Oxytocin is an awesome body composition player. Our sources consider it the overall best recomping tool among peptides.
Best recomping tool? How?
Its mechanism is unique, almost revolutionary. It literally drives the biotransformation process of ATPi to myocyte.
Okay. English, please.
Right. ATPi refers to adipocyte progenitor cells, basically. Potential or inactive fat cells. Myocyte refers to muscle tissue. So oxytocin actively drives the conversion process of utilizing stored energy and body fat to fuel anabolism.
Wait, it tells the body to use fat to build muscle directly.
That's the idea. It encourages redirecting energy from fat stores into muscle building and repair. It's like a biological remodeler, a potential game changer for reshaping body composition beyond just diet and exercise. And our source details this very cool protocol showing how complex these strategies can get, especially for something like severe sexual dysfunction, which often has metabolic roots.
Okay, what's the protocol?
It pairs oxytocin with Livin or Vion. These are compounds that help unroll and decondense chromatin for epigenetic change. Basically, they make your DNA more accessible for beneficial genetic expression changes.
Making the blueprint easier to rewrite, essentially.
Kind of, yeah. And it also includes copulin.
Copulin, what's that?
Female pheromones. Apparently, when detected by males, they can directly increase testosterone and stimulate the prefrontal cortex via olfactory connections to the hippocampus and amygdala brain areas for memory, emotion.
Whoa. Okay, that's complex. Hormones, epigenetics, pheromones.
Exactly. It highlights how medicine 3.0 allows for these highly targeted synergistic strategies, leveraging multiple pathways, hormonal, genetic, even neurochemical influences for really profound, holistic results. It's way beyond just hitting one target.
That oxytocin stuff is genuinely mind-blowing, literally redirecting energy like that. Okay, so from cellular power and body remodeling, let's pivot. Let's talk about mastering metabolic regulation, especially that monster we all fight, hunger.
Yes, hunger, a powerful driver.
And then let's leap into nootropics tools, specifically for optimizing the brain itself. This is stuff that impacts daily function, clarity, focus.
Yeah.
Huge quality of life implications.
Absolutely. Hugely relevant areas. And if we connect this back, you can see a clear evolution in some compound classes here, especially metabolic ones, moving from single target effects to broader, stronger signaling. Let's dive into the GLP agonist family. You've probably heard of these. Semaglutide, tirzepatide, retatrutide.
Oh, yeah. Definitely hearing a lot about those.
Right. Our source describes their development as an evolutionary process. They increasingly target multiple receptors involved in metabolism and appetite, GLP-1, GAP, and glucagon, GCG. First, semaglutide. This is a GLP-1 agonist, acts mainly on that one receptor.
And its main job.
Primary action. It manages hunger drastically well. For many people, that means significantly less appetite, fewer cravings, makes weight management much easier.
But there's more to it.
Yes, a really interesting neurological benefit. Our sources say it has the best potential to be the neurological nootropic player in this family.
Nootropic.
Apparently, it can be microdosed to downregulate specific receptors in the brain's reward pathway, often linked to addiction. It might help people come off of addictive behaviors, alcohol, drugs, by reducing that neurological drive.
Fascinating. So it's kind of the entry point.
Often, yeah. More focused action, generally milder side effects. Easiest way into this family for many. Next up, tirzepatide. This one levels up. It's a dual agonist hitting both GLP-1 and GIP receptors.
So stronger effects.
Our source says it's the one that tends to reduce hunger the most.
Yeah.
Beyond just appetite, it's also a pretty good driver on overall nutrient partitioning. Helps the body use nutrients better.
How else does it work?
It significantly slows gastric motility, how fast food leaves your stomach, which keeps you feeling full longer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really big player in driving up the overall insulin reception cascade. Better insulin sensitivity, better blood sugar control, big metabolic impact. And then the newest, most advanced one, retatrutide. This hits all three. GLP-1, GIP, and GCG, glucagon receptor.
It's a triple threat. What does the glucagon part add?
That glucagon stimulation tends to make it the most anabolic of the group. Promotes muscle growth.
Ooh.
Through microvascular changes, better blood flow, and stimulating MTOR, that muscle-building pathway we talked about.
Okay, sounds powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Any downsides?
This raises an important question, a real nuance. Counterintuitively, retatrutide can actually increase your hunger at many doses.
Wait, increase hunger? Isn't it for weight loss?
Yeah, it's weird. Often needs higher doses to get the appetite suppression. Also, because it has such higher chemical signaling strength.
More side effects.
The potential goes up, yes, including massive immune responses in some people. So as our source wisely points out, there's never the best one. It's about which one and how much of a chemical response do you need.
Tailoring it.
Exactly. Retatrutide is for when you need the absolute heaviest, biggest chemical signal hitting all three pathways. Most potent, most anabolic, but highest risk. Semaglutide is the bare minimum action entry point, good hunger control, neuro benefits, less intense. It's about matching the tool to the job and the person.
That's a really clear breakdown of a complex family.
Mm.
Okay, from metabolism, let's switch to the immune system. We often think of immunity as just good or bad, but it's way more dynamic, right?
Right.
Can these compounds help modulate it?
Absolutely. The immune system is incredibly adaptable, and that's where thymic peptides for immune modulation come into play. They work on the thymus gland, crucial for immune development.
How do they work differently?
They act at different stages: preglandular, glandular, and postglandular. This dictates how fast they work and whether they're more non-genomic or genomic long-term. Let's break them down. The mosin alpha 1, specifically the postglandular form, is the most acute non-genomic player. It's designed to boost immune response right now.
Like for an acute infection.
Yes, exactly. Our biggest acute player rapidly boosts T cells, cytokine production, immediate support. Then there's thymulin, the glandular form. This one works by convincing the gland to work itself, stimulating the thymus to produce more immune cells, balance things out. It's a moderate timing chemical signaling player. Not instant, not super long-term in its acute effects. More like nudging the system. And finally, thymosin alpha 1, the preglandular form. This is a genomic player. It takes the longest to act.
Why?
Because it works by influencing gene expression in immune cells over time, promotes long-term thymic health, long-term immunity. Our expert source mentions taking this version weekly for that sustained foundational immune support, building resilience from the ground up.
Incredible. Targeting immunity at different points in the timeline. Okay, final frontier for this segment, the brain. Cognitive optimization. What are the standout nootropics our sources mention?
Right, the brain. Always fascinating. Moving into nootropics and cognitive enhancers, some are peptides, some aren't, but all aimed at optimizing brain function. First, NEP. It's primary action, a powerful speech player or a memory player.
How does it help cognitively?
It effectively modulates glutamate toxicity. Glutamate is an excitatory neurotransmitter, but too much, especially from stimulants like caffeine or intense mental effort, can be damaging. NEP helps buffer that.
Okay, protective. What else?
By doing that, it drives neuronal communication for better focus, verbal fluidity, memory recall, and solidifying memories. And it's a non-genomic player. Effects are pretty immediate and noticeable boost when needed. Then there's dihexa, often called the communicator. Its primary job is fundamental. It allows neurons to actually communicate with each other more effectively. This is crucial for neuroplasticity, the brain's ability to adapt and form new connections.
So not an immediate feeling.
Not really. Dihexa isn't about feeling better right now. It's about making you better tomorrow, in weeks from now. It's a genomic player, focused on long-term improvements in overall neuronal communication and changes in synapses, building a better, more adaptable brain over time. Okay, Celanc and Cimax. Chemically different, but often compared for cognitive enhancement.
What's the difference?
Silang is noted as the major anxiolytic aid. Great for reducing anxiety. While doing that, it also drives BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor key, for learning and memory.
So calm focus.
Exactly. Helps with focus and concentration in a low arousal state. Useful for athletes, maybe performers, anyone needing sharp focus without sympathetic overdrive. C-Max, on the other hand, focuses more on modulating dopamine, serotonin, and the prefrontal cortex, the brain's CEO. It drives changes for memory, learning, neuroplasticity, but doesn't need the anxiolytic aid.
So the key difference is?
The delineator for you, the listener, is whether you need to be in that low arousal state. Do you need that calming effect along with the cognitive boost? Or just the boost? And finally, for really comprehensive brain support, cerebrolysin.
Sounds serious.
It is, in a good way, described as the overall neuronal repair compound. It's not one thing, but a mix of neurotrophic factors from porcine brain tissue.
Like a cocktail of brain boosters.
Pretty much. BDNF, glial cell, line-derived factors, others. It drives neuroplasticity, reduces brain inflammation, improves speech, memory, motor function. Considered the best one out there for overall repair-based brain support.
How's it typically used?
Often taken on rest days by high performers for cognitive recovery. Also used clinically for serious neurological conditions like Alzheimer's, dementia, Parkinson's, usually via IV in those cases. It's a deep, holistic approach to brain repair and optimization.
Wow, what a tour. Healing, cellular energy, body comp, hunger, brain power. It's clear Medicine 3.0 gives us incredibly precise levers to pull. So let's wrap up by looking at compounds targeting muscle growth, heart health, fundamental metabolism, even overall longevity. This really shows the sheer breadth of this approach, right? Optimizing the body's core systems in ways we barely imagined before.
Absolutely. And if we connect this back, many of these compounds show how really specific targeted actions can have these profound ripple effects throughout the entire system. It's about understanding those intricate biological cascades. Let's start with muscle. TFF-alpha.
TFF-alpha. What's its claim to fame?
Primary action. The biggest muscle-based player. How? It literally stops all those cascades from binding to drive myostatin levels. It effectively blunts myostatin.
Myostatin, that's the protein that limits muscle growth, right?
Exactly. So blunting it allows for more anabolism, more muscle growth. But, and this raises an important point. There's a caveat. If you blunt myostatin too much, you always have immune-based problems. Your body keeps it around for a reason. There's a balance.
Right. And it won't turn you into one of those super muscly cows.
No, our source is clear. It won't make you look like the Belgian blue cows, which are naturally deficient. It's a powerful tool for anabolism within normal human physiology, complementing training and nutrition, not creating freaks of nature. Okay, moving on. Tadalafil, better known as Cialis.
Right, for ED. But you said it has broader benefits.
Good time. Beyond ED, its primary action here is that it reduces cardiac fibrosis, that sparring or thickening of heart tissue.
So good for the heart after an event.
Incredibly valuable after a cardiac myopathy or cardiac event, helps remodel and improve heart function, big cardioprotective effect, and a key secondary action. It also improves the transportation of fatty acids into neurological tissue.
Fatty acids to the brain, that sounds important.
Can be, yeah, for brain health and energy. And just by improving blood flow, generally changing hemodynamics, it indirectly helps nutrient partitioning, anabolism, gets blood to working tissues, maybe even aids fat loss. Super versatile.
That's a perfect example. Common drug, hidden systemic benefits. Exactly what Medicine 3.0 uncovers. Now, what about these two metabolic modulators, BAM15 and FX11? Sound like they have some interesting wrinkles.
Oh, they're fascinating. Really innovative compounds in the metabolic space, BAM15 and FX11. And yeah, with intriguing implications, especially around cancer, but the way they're discussed is key. BAM15, it's a protonophoric uncoupler.
Okay, meaning?
It's primary action, our biggest fat loss-based player. It makes mitochondria inefficient via proton flux. Normally, protons flow neatly to make ATP energy. BAM15 makes them leak through the membrane, generating heat instead.
So it wastes energy, forcing the body to burn more fat.
Exactly. It drives lipolysis and beta oxidation. But here's the surprising secondary action. It can also make the mitochondria in cancer cells inefficient. And this can ultimately drive apoptosis, help kill those cancer cells by messing with their energy supply. Then there's FX11. Its primary action is more directly cancer-focused. based on the idea that cancer cells thrive on glycogen, stored glucose.
So FX11 targets that.
Yeah, it blunts glycolysis, the breakdown of glucose, and modulates lactate. The goal is to slowly kill off these cancer cells by starving them of their preferred fuel, driving inefficiency and apoptosis. Now, what's really fascinating and a crucial marketing distinction is the language. Even though research shows these anti-cancer effects,
they can't market them that way.
Right. Because that might seem to go against chemotherapy or imply specific uses with other treatments, very tricky regulatory area. So BAM15 gets marketed as the beta oxidative player for fat loss, FX11 as the down regulatory player in glycolysis for metabolic modulation.
Focusing on the official metabolic mechanism.
Exactly. It highlights how important precise terminology and careful marketing are when bringing these cutting-edge things mainstream, while still acknowledging their broader potential.
That's a really sharp point about the language, a real balancing act.
Yeah.
Okay, speaking of broad impacts, what about a universal repair agent? Something for almost every cell.
That definitely points towards glutathione.
Glutathione. How is it best used?
Well, our source mentions various ways. Traditional injections, IM, IV, subcutaneous, are usually seen as optimal for getting it systemically. But liposomal and even oral forms are beneficial too, just with potentially different absorption and efficacy. Now, we talked about cerebralisin for neural repair. Glutathione, you could say, is everything else repair. It drives cellular repair pretty much everywhere else in the body.
It's his main job.
Maintaining that crucial balance between its reduced active form and its oxidized inactive form inside cells. Vital for antioxidant defense and detoxification.
Sounds essential.
Yeah.
Any caveats?
Yes, a big one, raising an important question for cancer patients. The role there is complex. Glutathione could be potentiating and fueling your cancer cells.
Protecting the cancer cells.
Potentially, yes. Working against your chemo or radiation by shielding those cells from stress. So if used in cancer patients, it should be done infrequently, allowing mitochondrial ROS reactive oxygen species to build up, which can paradoxically help kill cancer cells.
Wow, okay. That's critical nuance. But for most people.
For most, it's an amazing player. Master antioxidant detoxifier, often used maybe 1-3 times a week, maybe on rest days for high cellular repair, or daily at lower doses if you're under a lot of oxidative stress, intense training, illness, etc. Next, Alflutop. This one's a bit under the radar.
Alflutop, what to do?
Our source calls it one of the best never talked about cartilage joint-based recovery players. Primary action is improving chondrocyte metabolism, cartilage, cell health, and general soft tissue repair. Great for joints.
But there's more.
Yes. A significant secondary action makes it a longevity tool. It drives up superoxide dismutase SOD levels.
SOD. What's that?
A crucial antioxidant enzyme your body makes, but levels decline after age 30 or so. Boosting SOD makes Alflutop a massive longevity player, supporting long-term immune function, baseline cellular health, protecting against age-related damage.
Nice. Can it be used with glutathione?
Yeah, they can work synergistically, hitting critical mitochondrial receptors for both repair and antioxidant defense. And finally, a really unique one that fits the Medicine 3.0 vibe perfectly, methylene blue.
Methylene blue, this isn't a blue dye.
It is, but it's also one of the coolest ones therapeutically. Its primary action is profoundly increasing cerebral metabolic rate, CMR.
Meaning the brain works faster.
More like it gets better at using fuel glucose, acetylcholine, ketones. It hyper-regulates how fast your brain is working, boosting cognitive function, clarity, focus. How else does it work? It modulates mitochondrial complexes, enhances photonic exchange so it can actually boost the benefits you get from sunlight or red light therapy.
Makes light therapy work better.
Cool. Yeah. And it also functions as a basic antiviral antibacterial, useful for general wellness, travel support.
And how does it fit into Medicine 3.0?
Well, it's not a peptide, but it's one of those non-traditional methods becoming socially acceptable soon.
Huh.
It complements rather than replaces pharmaceuticals. That complementary approach is key to how these things are integrating. A powerful tool for holistic optimization. Hashtag tag tag outro.
Wow. What an absolute incredible journey through this cutting edge world. Peptides, ancillary compounds. From understanding the art of applying them, those crucial differences like linear versus threshold dosing.
Right, or non-genomic versus genomic actions.
Exactly. Seeing how grasping those basics really empowers you, the listener, to make smarter, more informed choices about your own health and performance. It's huge.
You're absolutely right. And if we zoom out, connect it to the bigger picture, it's so clear there's always more to learn, isn't there? Exploring these different perspectives just enriches everything. We've really only, you know, scratched the surface today.
Definitely feels that way.
But hopefully this deep dive has sparked some genuine aha moments, given you a clearer map of how these powerful compounds can be used intelligently for healing, for performance, for just optimizing well-being. It really points towards a future of precision health.
So what does all this mean for you listening right now? We really hope you feel better equipped, maybe more inspired, to navigate this fast-evolving landscape, to see how Medicine 3.0 isn't about throwing out the old, but about thoughtfully complementing what we already have, aiming for truly optimized health, a more vital life. And as you think about everything we've covered, here's a little something to mull over. What's one area, just one of your own personal health or performance? Maybe it's recovery, energy, focus, something you've always wanted to optimize. How might understanding these concepts, these compounds, shift your approach, move you from maybe feeling stuck to feeling empowered? Just something to think about until our next deep dive. This deep dive was brought to you by InfinityPeptide.com. Definitely check them out for more cutting-edge research and practical applications of these incredible compounds. Thank you so much for joining us on the deep dive. Keep exploring, keep asking questions, keep learning. We'll be back soon with more.